Hi everyone. So today we're talking to Dr. Jadeh Jimri. Dr. Jadeh Jimri is a sociologist living in Abkhazia. She received her PhD in migration studies from the University of Sussex in 2014 with her dissertation on return migration to the Caucasus, the Adige Abkhaz diaspora, transnationalism, and life after return. Her research interests include migration, diaspora, Abkhazia, post-Soviet studies, identity, culture, and gender. Her current projects include gender and music industry, representing gendered every day in rural Turkey and the Netherlands through drama, creating a digital photo and sound archive for the 160th year of the exile, and on gender identity and traditional clothing in the Caucasus. Thank you so much, Dr. Jadeh Jimri, for agreeing to speak to us today.
Thank you for having me today.
So my first question is somewhat research specific. So I think that in Western academia, the Caucasus as a region of study seems to be a bit marginalized. Would you agree with that? And can you give us an overview of why you chose to do research in the Caucasus and on the issue of return migration more specifically? And for our audience members who maybe don't know, can you give us a little bit of background about the Caucasus and the issue of return?
Yeah, I agree that Caucasus is very marginalized. And I didn't have any research interest in the region, though my ancestors are from the Caucasus. But on my fourth year studying sociology in Turkey, one of my teachers, who is of Ahıska Mesketian origin, she said, you must write a paper about your own family history of the exile of the Circassians. And I said, I have family ties and I know my history, but what does it have to do with my migration course? Mm-hmm. And I want to focus more on a recent reality of migration. For example, during the Soviet times, there were a lot of migrations. This was pre-Soviet times. So I was more interested in this period. And she said, like, just start reading and writing about it. If you don't like it, I will give you extra time to submit another assignment. And when I started reading, I realized that most of the things I knew were just stories and narratives from my grandfather and elderly relatives, but they also didn't know what really happened to them. So I started to read more and I wrote that paper and many more papers during my fourth year about the Circassian culture, identity, diaspora and exile. And then I thought, like, this is the path I want to go. I want to study something that is so little known and so not discussed. Because I met through Circassian associations, North Caucasian associations, people who were return migrating to the Caucasus, which was a very recent migration. It was a post-Soviet reality that gave them a chance to return to their ancestral homeland. And I thought I will start working on this, but it was very hard because there were not resources, there were not possibility to do a master's or a PhD on the topic, neither in Turkey nor elsewhere in the world. Because when you say you're going to work on a group of people who people have never heard of, scholars, even geographers had no idea where the Caucasus was, where Abkhazia and Adige was, who these people were. They just had heard of Circassians, maybe occasionally. But it was very hard to be convincing that this is a reality that has similarities and parallel reality to what's happening elsewhere in the world about ancestral return migration with the Greeks, with the Jews, and with the Armenians, for example. And it was interesting to study. So this marginalization of the topic was a problem when I started and is still a problem today for people who are gaining interest in the region.
Mm-hmm. I know that as someone who also like developed an interest in the Caucasus, I really appreciate that people like you have written about this and that there's something for me to refer back to. So I really appreciate your work. For the issue of violence, how have histories and narratives of violence been relevant to your research? And more broadly, how do they remain central to understanding the daily lives of people in the Caucasus now. For example, I appreciate in your research that it's multidisciplinary. There's history, there's sociology, you have mixed methods. So here I'm referring to the forced expulsion of Circassians from the Caucasus after Russian imperial expansion in the late 1800s, and to the other forms of violence that the Circassian community was exposed to during the Ottoman era and in modern-day Turkey.
When we look at the classical definition of the diaspora, we see that dispersion and forced dispersion is one of the main reasons for a diaspora to form. And the forced expulsion, deportation of the, and even today we call it genocide, looking at the definition of genocide as well, what happened to the Caucasian people in the second half of the 19th century, is genocide and exile, and in different languages you can use different words. But when you look at the terminology, you find out that these people didn't have a choice to live in their own land, where they had been, they felt a belonging to, and were displaced to the Ottoman Empire, which dissolved into many different countries with the 20th century. And now, today, wherever they live, they protected this feeling that they were forced to leave their homeland. And one of the core unification of the North Caucasian diasporas, Adige Abkhaz people, is this displacement and this history of violence towards them. And for this reason, in the diaspora, it makes who they are. And also, when they return back, they carry along this feeling of we were forced from here. In my PhD, I heard a lot of people reflected about how they felt when they get on a ship, because they had heard so many stories of sinking ships when they were being displaced. And during this expulsion, a lot of people died on the ships as well. Babies were thrown in the water, and when they died or when there was sickness, some people were not allowed to get on the ship if they were sick. So a lot of, and the ships divided the families, and they arrived to different places in the Ottoman Empire. So in this regard, everything, who they are and what they have lost, and even today, is very dependent on this history. So their experience of coming back to the ancestral homeland, which they feel belonging because of this displacement, is also very traumatic, because they remember all these stories in their journeys. So that's why I wanted to put a chapter in my PhD where I reflect about the journeys itself. Mm. Where I give them voice about how this past traumas is affecting their current traumas. If they are being stopped, if they are having trouble at the border, for example, they relate it to their past experience, past traumas, this violence their ancestors lived. And as if that this expulsion is still going on, they feel that they will not be allowed in their homeland, or they fear that they will not be allowed.
That's very interesting, I think, especially considering this idea that like violence isn't just that momentary event, but it's ongoing. And then my next question was about your own experience with doing research and how your positionality affected your research experience. How were you perceived by your interlocutors? I know that you talk about this in your dissertation, so I was wondering if you could share a little bit about this.
Yeah, when I started my PhD, I never thought about my various identities are going to influence what I'm doing, because I come from a statistical background, but I didn't find statistical research helpful in studying the ancestral return migration of Adige Abkhaz people, because of all this history and traumas and narratives and how everybody's story was different from each other, while they had similarities to each other, of course. I wanted to protect this richness. And then I understand that my own identity, the way I talk with people, who my ancestors are, my ties to various countries, especially I was doing my PhD in the UK, so I had the British perspective they told. I was a Westerner, outsider, but I was also an insider. So I was thinking a lot about these things, and I reflected that in a section on positionality in my methodology chapter. But being a woman, Circassian woman, was hard in the sense that I was not fitting to the traditional of the Circassian woman. Yes. Because I was comfortable, flexible, traveling all the time, and this caused me experiencing some violence and some bad experiences during my fieldwork, because one other scholar that I asked for her opinion, also Circassian, who worked on the Circassian diaspora in Turkey, she told me that because you're so mobile, you're seen as available and mm-hmm. non-traditional, so they think that they can offer you anything. So these all created conflict within me, because I also come from, I expected them to be mm-hmm. traditional Circassian men around me, or women as well, but this reactions towards me as an international researcher was not very comfortable sometimes. But I wrote about it, reflected about it, and dealt with it in every time in its own way. And I think the hardest part was understanding where I should stand in every situation and how I should react as a traditional Circassian woman, which they don't think I am, or as someone who is a strong international, global woman who can defend herself in every situation and who has to protect herself with her own means and own strength. So there was this questioning all the time for me during fieldwork after a first negative experience.
Mm-hmm. No, I think I always appreciate when scholars talk about their positionality, because it kind of guides others, especially if they're women, if they have similar experiences with like kind of needing to fit or being perceived as fitting a traditional role. So I think I appreciate also that you shared that experience. So you mentioned that you also were in the UK. I'm curious about what's your experience as an academic working across these different geographies in the Caucasus, in the UK, in Turkey. Can you talk a little bit about how your experience of moving between these spaces has shaped your perspective? I know that you publish in multiple languages, English, Turkish, and Russian. Why is it important for you to publish in different languages?
At first, I thought as a scholar, it was very normal to be part of multiple spaces and multiple perspectives. But it's like juggling between all these every time. You have to question which makes sense in which context. For example, I realized that UK and Russian academy have different expectations from scholars. And one time I was like complaining to a UK colleague who is a migration scholar as well, that in the Caucasus I cannot cooperate with anyone because they have a different understanding. They don't mm-hmm. know how to write an academic piece. And he said, maybe it's us who are doing wrong.
Mm.
And that really made me think, as an insider in the UK context, he was questioning their own positionality. And I was an outsider in the UK context as well, because I came from Turkey. I was trying to meet the high standards, the high expectations all the time. And that was when I stopped trying to meet everything and try to reflect on what I want to do about any data I have or about a conference I want to attend. And I moved beyond the expectations of both communities. And I think using the different languages to reach out to different audiences also helped this. Because one time an Abkhazian friend told me that, why don't we ever read anything from you? Because we know that you're working hard, we can see it, you're doing a lot of things, but what the hell are you doing? So it was important to write something in Russian to give it to him. He was the first person I gave it my book in Russian, for example, as a present, because it was his motivation that made me finish that book before any publication from my PhD. It is very important to reach out to people you interact with, you do research with, and write publications that reach out to them. Sometimes academic publications are too much for everyone to understand, so I also try to write text and talk, give talks that are non-academic as well, so that I return to all these kind of people who open their hearts and their stories to me, what I understood from what they shared with me. So I think it's important for scholars, migrant scholars like us who work in multiple contexts, to do whatever they can to be part of the community, but they don't have to fit in everything expected from them.
Mm-hmm. I think that point about like publicly engaged scholarship is very relevant to my next question. Because part of what this research cluster at the Orfila Center is trying to do is make links between scholarship, art, and activism. And I also know that after being in academia for many years, you recently expanded your scope of work into design. And I know that you incorporate traditional circassian dress into your work. So I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about your design projects and about your views on these links.
Yeah, thank you. I'm a self-proclaimed designer. I started as just because of curiosity since childhood I had, but last year I just asked a friend to borrow me his sewing machine, and I knew I had a lot of ideas about the traditional clothing, how it can be part of our everyday life. And I know that there are some designers who are doing that, but it's not very affordable because they are design.
Mm-hmm.
And so a way to go beyond that problem for me as a little earning academic, because one of the problems of working on the Caucasus is that you have little funding, mm-hmm. little resources. If you're not employed in European or American university in a full-time job,
mm-hmm.
you're already precarious in all around the world. But in this area, which is marginalized, it's mm-hmm. harder. And so I thought, like, I will sew things for myself, but then it moved to an idea to do something about how the Caucasian, Circassian and Abkhazian dresses can be part of the everyday. And then I started realizing that in some other countries or some other ethnic groups, like the Cossacks of Russia, Georgians, and also Azerbaijanis use this clothes, calling them Cherkeska, for example, the male dress of top dress, and using sometimes giving other names to them, but using something that's derived from the traditional clothing of the North Caucasus, and they use it in many different forms. And people always complain about it in the diaspora and in the homeland that we cannot make our things visible, but some other people can. So I remembered one scholar who was working on music who told me that music doesn't have the national borders.
Mm.
So I wanted to look into clothing as a design and how it reflects in the everyday life, like contemporary designs of the traditional clothing, and how it can decrease the distance between the peoples of the Caucasus, north and south, all mm-hmm. together. So I'm working on a project, developing a project like this, but I'm also divided between another project, also of its artistic side, which is on the 160th year of the Circassian exile, which is next year, where I want to collect a lot of resources, archival documents, photographs, narratives from people about their family histories, all the recordings and everything, and put it in a digital platform to make the reality of the Caucasus, especially with the exile and after the exile, more visible to everyone.
Yes, I think that's amazing. And I've personally seen some of your designs. I think they're beautiful, and I encourage people to check them out. So to conclude this podcast episode, I just wanted to ask you if there's anything else that you would like to add that I haven't asked you about, or any projects that you would like to share. I know you've shared some.
No, but I would like to encourage anyone who wants to explore the area. I know this is a hard time to travel to this part mm-hmm. of the world, but keep my contact, and in the future, if you come to the region and if you have plans, I'll be happy to help.
Thank you so much, Dr. Jade Jimre. I really appreciate this, and this is amazing, and thank you for sharing your knowledge.
Thank you very much for having me.